used to that we're unprepared for. And what we do that I believe that our tradition pushes us, if it doesn't obligate us, to look into our history, into shared experiences from the past, and help us sort of plan for the future. How do we grapple with so many new kind of issues that we're dealing with? In fact, the when we had a few weeks ago in our men's chabura, we brought up the topic about doing porch minyanim. Right, porch minyanim. Couldn't you daven with people on their porches? Everybody spread out a little bit. And one of the things that we brought up was that this shaila actually goes all the way back to the Korban Pesach. The question was, when you ate the Korban Pesach, and what did it mean to be in your home? Could you be outside your home? Could you be inside your home? And I think that, for me at least, that showed the timelessness of Torah and the fact that we're going to have to use what has happened in our past, different generations, different characters, different storylines, and how does that help us as we sort of plan and move back into this world, which seems a little bit different than maybe we're used to. Mirtz Hashem, we'll be back soon enough to the world that maybe we're accustomed to, but hopefully with a little bit of stronger, stronger skills, stronger traits, different things. So the first thing we're going to start with is Emuna. And that's really tonight's topic. And tonight's topic was really motivated by a conversation I had with a student who really was struggling with these issues of emuna, issues of how could this happen, how could God let this happen, questions that any kid, any teenager, any adolescent, any adult should have the right to ask and want answers to. So I thought we'd look at a topic tonight. There's no better person to start with than Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu is the person we're going to go to talk about Emuna. Why Avram Avinu? Because his entire life of Avram is all about faith. And Avram continues to grow in his Emuna. So as we start to venture into a period of unknown, who better than to inform us of that unknown than Avram Avinu? So the first question is the following. Avram founds monotheism. And nobody had more struggles with Emuna, perhaps, than Avram. He wants to know, how in the world do we get to where we are today? So let's look for a second. I'll show you. I'll share this in 1 second. Hold on. Here we go. So let's make this a little bigger. Whoops, that's the wrong way. Okay. So the Medrash tells us the following. Avram was Rabbi Yochanan v'Rabbi Chanina Trevayu Amri be'arbayim v'shmonim shana. He was 48 years old when he hikir Avram es Bora, when Avraham recognizes his creator. Now, hikir, by the way, just happens to know, hikir is to recognize. The word hakaras hatov, for example, doesn't mean thank you. It means to recognize. It means to be out there in the world and to consciously be looking, which is really what Avram does. He's always searching. Reish Lakish Amar ben Shalosh Shanim Hikir Avram is Boro. So Avram was 48 or Avram was 3. So the question is, does it make a difference? What are they arguing about? What is this debate? How old Avram was as to whether or not he was 48, was he 3? What does it make a difference? Was it 40? We'll see. Who cares? Who cares? So the answer is that what's happening here is a debate about not just how old he was, but how does Emuna, what does it mean, Emuna? We throw that term out all the time. I have Emuna, I have faith. This debate about Avram is a debate about faith. According to the opinion, he was 3. Right, what is a child? A child's emuna at the age of 3. What does that mean that he has emuna? It means you tell him I'm going to give you a candy. He believes I'm going to get it. It's not going to happen. It's absolutely going to happen. It's what we will call emuna pshuta. Emuna pshuta is there is a God, and that is so clear to Avram like a 3-year-old child. 3-year-old children do not live with gray. There isn't like, I don't know, I'm not sure. It's yes or no. Are we going on the trip or are we not going on the trip? We might go on the trip. I don't know what that means. Children don't have gray areas. To Avram, 3 years old, it was a emuna pshuta. However, the opinion that says he was 40 believes that while emuna pshuta is good, there should be more. You continue to recognize God at three, but you don't fully come into the picture until you're 40, as you continue to grow. Which, you know, they tell the story. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky used to tell the story about the guy at his ufruf that was still wearing the train tzitzis that he got when he was three. Right? When he first put on tzitzis, they got the little train, he made the bracha, it's beautiful. But he's 25 years old. Why is he still wearing train tzitzis? As you get older, you have to grow. The same way we grow physically, we grow spiritually. And as Avram gets older, he built on that emunah pshuta. When we start to build on those things, different questions might come into our minds. So this is, so if we turn now for a second to Rabbi Soloveitchik. So Rabbi Soloveitchik talks about this idea, and he says the following. He says, while yearning usually emerges in more advanced developmental stages, Avram experienced the metaphysical pulse very early at the age of three. Right? So while we might do what Avram does later, none of us at 3 years old are going out. Right? How does Avram decide that there's a God? He goes out and he says, how could this be? Doesn't make sense. Now the truth is that in the world of Emuna, there is a philosophy called the Aristotelian philosophy. Aristotle, who the Rambam will quote at times, Aristotle believed that there was something called a prime mover. Prime mover meant that there was a being that created the world, and then he sort of let it run. Now, the Avram is taking that to the next level. First, Avram is saying, there's no way that the grass just grows like that. There's no way that we just develop this way. There's no way that all of these things just work. There has to be somebody behind it. Now, Avram's going to take it to the next level because Avram's going to say, that person's going to care about me, and that's really the source I want to get to tonight. We're not there yet. Okay, but the Rambam says, Avram does that at the age of three. All right, maybe you and I at the age of three or five or even 13 or 23 or 33 are not necessarily going out and asking these deep philosophical questions. But Avram does that at the age of three. On the other hand, to say that Avram found God or recognized God at that young age would be tantamount to the admission that recognition of God is an easy matter. It's not an easy matter. No matter how gifted a child may be, the Rav says on the right side, he cannot perform as well as an adult. Hence, Maimonides thought to interpret the Agada, that's meaning which, how old was Avram, literally would be wrong. He therefore considered two opinions not as contradictory, but as supplementary. Searching is part of the great, exhilarating, redemptive experience of meeting God. This line is so crucial. So even if you're doing something else, I'll read it again. Searching is part of the great, exhilarating, redemptive experience of meeting God. That search began when he was an infant, and the meeting took place decades later. And he says that creation itself employs motion. You have to move. Now, what I believe the Rav is saying is a fundamental piece to Emunah. We have to realize that the search of what we do is part of our Emunah. The Rav saying that Avram searched at the age of three, he might not have met God until the age of 40. Searching for God, uvikashtem, ki matzasa, ki sidrashenu, we search for God, we look for him. That's all of Shir HaShirim, is searching for God. That is part of Emunah. We live in a world where that is so counterintuitive to the world in which we live. Right? We live in a world in which I want an answer, and I want that answer right now. So if I want to believe in God, show it to me. If I want a message from God, show me that message in the clearest possible forms. Don't send me a message that I have to decipher, that I got to go on a National Treasure movie hunt. Give me a sign as clear as could be that this is what I'm supposed to do. And that's the point of the Rambam. Searching for God is part of Emunah. And that's why it's so crucial that during times in which we find ourselves, when we might be dealing with struggles in Emunah, that maybe individually we might have gone through things, but as a nation and as an Am, we might not have experienced this struggle with Emunah maybe since the Shoah. And maybe not. Maybe we're not struggling with emunah and kol hakavod. I don't think that's the same level of emunah. I don't even believe to compare the two. But I'm saying we're living through a time in which, as a nation, we're like, what do we make of this? How do we figure this out? And Avram is telling us that those questions, those issues, that searching, that's part of emunah. There's emunah pshuta. So the first thing is that if I can ask those questions, I fundamentally believe that God has a plan. I'm questioning it, and I'm struggling, but I'm not denying God. So the first base level, the foundation is that even within that search is the belief that I trust God. Then the fact that I'm asking questions and I'm searching and I'm confused and I don't know what to make of it, I can say, hey, that's part of my faith. Searching is part of emunah. And that's the first thing that I think Avram teaches us. Just how Avram finds God plays a role in 2020 during this pandemic. It teaches us that Avram's quest to find God, Avram's questions, which we're going to see right now, is part. Avram is the one who, when God himself says, I'm going to destroy Sodom, Hashem says, Machas ani ma'Avraham. I'm not going to not tell Avram what I'm about to do. And he brings Avram into the conversation. And Avram says, God, how could you do this? And Professor Berkowitz, in his book, and Elie Wiesel quotes Professor Berkowitz. And Elie Wiesel says that the questioning of God is not denying God. And even though Avram doesn't really question God, but Avram's search for MS and for connection is part of emunah. And I think, as you know, so to get back to this conversation I had with a student, I said, these questions are normal. It's good to ask these questions. It's good to express those emotions. And you realize that by asking those questions, you know, it's easy to have emunah when things have gone well and things are easy. When things begin, and look at Avram's life. It's not easy. Promise a great reward, can't have children. Promise a great land, famine. Tries to buy his own. He comes home after his wife dies from the test that God says to do with the Akedah. He's got to buy his property back. And Avram struggles and he grows through each one of those tests. Okay. So that's level number one. That just Avram's connection, Avram's foundation of how he gets to emunah is important for us in 2020. But let's move a little bit ahead. So look at the following source. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, very, very important. I don't know, let's move this ahead. Hold on. All right. It says the Medrash. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Mashal li'achad shaya over mimakom l'makom. Avram is walking from place to place. It's a mashal. Hira bira achas dolekes. And Avram sees as he's walking, there's a palace that's on fire. Or anybody sees it. You see a palace on fire. Amar Tamar Shabira Zubalo Manhig. How could this be? This palace has no leader, no ruler. Hits its Olav Balabira. The owner of the palace comes out. Amar Lo Amio Balabira. I am the owner of the palace. Kach lefishayav avinu Avram sheomar ha'olam hazed lo manig. Avram is the same thing. Avram sees the world aflame, and he says, could it be that this world didn't have a leader? Hits its olav hakadosh baruch hu. Hashem says, ani ubaho. So the question is, what do we make of this medrash? And there is a beautiful piece by Rabbi Sachs that I would like to share with you. That is extremely crucial for all times, and I believe especially for now. He says the following. He says this deeply enigmatic passage, so much so that distinguished Jewish thinkers in our time have often misunderstood it. One of them translated a palace in flames, a palace full of light. It could be that Avram was seized by this mystic vision of beauty. That's one interpretation, that Avram sees this like unbelievable picture. And it's so breathtaking and so amazing that he's just caught, like he's wowed by it. Beneath its apparent randomness, the universe discloses an intricate order. The world did not come about by chance. To be short, every stage chance, random genetic mutation played a part, but the outcome was the emergence of intelligent self-conscious men. Okay. But says Rabbi Sacks, right here on the left side, these are both beautiful interpretations and each has its own validity, but they are not to be true to the passage itself. Avram sees a palace. The world has order, and therefore it has a creator. So the step number one is when Avram sees the palace means that there is an order to this world. It's not chaos. It's not a rubble. It's not a dilapidated, broken down shack in the middle of the desert. This is a palace. It has order to it, but it's in flames. The world is full of disorder, of evil, violence, injustice. Now, no one builds a building and deserts it. If there is a fire, there must be someone to put it out. The building must have had an owner. If so, where is he? That's the question, and it gives Avram no peace. Rabbi Sacks, in his book called A Letter to the Scroll, if you want great reading, order Rabbi Sacks' book, A Letter in the, Letter in the Scroll. It's his one of his earliest books. Phenomenal, unbelievable book. And Rabbi Sacks, his real chiddush here is that he says, Avram isn't saying, oh, what a palace, who's running it? God says, I'm running it, don't worry, there's order, it's all, it might look random, but I got it. Rabbi Sacks said, that's not what Avram's saying. Avram is saying is, where is the owner of this palace? How could this world have gone up in flames? So Rabbi Sacks writes the following. When we arrive at the starting point of Jewish faith, radical then and radical now, perhaps still not fully understood, faith is not born in the answer, but in the question, not in harmony, but in dissonance. If God created the world, then he created man. Why does he allow man to destroy the world? How are we to reconcile the order of nature with the disorder of society? Can God have made the world only to abandon it? That's Avram's question. How could this be? Either there should be no flames or there should be no palace. How could there be a palace with flames also? And Rabbi Sacks says beautifully, from time immemorial to the present, there's always been two ways of seeing the world. This is an amazing, amazing piece. The first says there is no God. There are contending forces, right? There are contending forces. They fight with each other. They battle each other. And one wins. So sometimes good wins. Sometimes evil wins. That is one way of viewing the world. And I'll tell you, it's very easy to view the world that way. And it's an extremely comfortable way to view the world. And if you view the world as basically, well, when good things happen, the good God won. When bad things happen, the bad God won. It is a very easy way to view the world. It's comfortable. It makes me go to sleep at night and say, okay, I'm sad and I'm horrified and it's terrible and I'm crying, but it makes sense. And I can go to sleep at night because when the good things happen, I said, all right, the good God won. Victory for the good God. That's one way of viewing the world. Now, Rabbi Sacks says the other way to view the world, and now in the first view, he's saying we can know how God, the world works, but never know why, because there's no why. There's no palace. There's just flames. Sometimes the flames win. Sometimes the flames lose, but there's no order. There's no palace. The second way to view the world is, of course, that there is a God, right? Now, all that's here is because God made it. All that happens is because God made it. Now, this becomes a little bit trickier. Because if I view the world in a fashion in which God made everything, how do I grapple with things that don't work out well? Now, we're not going to get into, bad things happen to good people. We did that a few years ago on Shavuos, maybe for a different time. This is not that topic. But Rabbi Sacks' point is, injustice is an illusion. Perhaps the word itself is an illusion. When the innocent suffer, it's to teach them to find faith through suffering, obedience through chastisement. Evil is the cloak that masks the good. There is a question, but there is always an answer. For if we could understand God, we would know the world. That's Avram. How could this be? And God's saying, I'm here. You might not understand it. There might be flames, but I'm in control. There is a palace. Therefore, you might see flames, and in your mind there are flames, but there are really no flames. The faith of Avram begins in the refusal to accept either answer. For both contain a truth, and between them there is a contradiction. The first accepts the reality of evil, the second the reality of God. The first says if evil exists, God can't. The second says if God exists, evil can't. How about both? If so, Rabbi Sachs says, and I've interpreted this medrash correctly, Judaism begins not in the wonder that the world is, but in a protest that the world is not as it ought to be. It's that cry, that sacred discontent that Avram's journey begins. At the heart of reality is a contradiction between order and chaos, order of creation, the chaos we create. There's no resolution to this conflict at the level of thought. It takes a long time. It takes years. The easy answer would be to deny the reality of either God or evil. Then the contradiction would disappear and we could live at peace with the world. That's what I just said. Ah, I can go to bed at night because there's no order in the world and it just doesn't make sense. But to be a Jew is to have the courage to refuse easy answers and to reject either consolation or despair. Says Rabbi Sachs, Judaism is uniquely a restless faith. They're always traveling, dissatisfied with status quo, never quite merging with their environment. And that, I think, is an extremely, and this is the last paragraph we'll do. What Hans tells us about God's this medrash is not about Avram's question, but God's reply. He gives an answer. That is no answer. He says, in effect, I am here without explaining the flames. He does not attempt to put out the fire. It is as if instead he were calling for help. God made the building. Man set it on fire, and only man can put out the flame. Avram says, where are you? And God says, I'm here. But where are you? And I believe that this medrash, and especially Rabbi Sachs' interpretation, is so important and powerful for the world in which we find ourselves. The world does seem a little bit in flames. It seemed a little bit in flames. Questions we don't have answers to, futures that are uncertain, decisions that we don't know how to make, Shilohs, all of these things. And we've done, as we've pointed out many times, a tremendous job in the last few months. And we've adapted and we've pivoted and we've asked the right Shilohs and we've gone to Gedolim. And I'm not talking about shutting down. And I'm talking about Emunah. Rabbi Sachs's point is that when the world is in flames, there is no easy answer. To say that there's just flames and no God, we of course don't believe. To just say that there is just God, well, we see that what's happening in the world. And God's answer is yes. The simple answer is Emunah Pshuta. It's Avram at 3. I just don't get it, God. I might have questions, but I know that there is a plan. I don't know what it is, and I wish I did. But Avram is saying Emunah Pshuta. But the older Avraham within us is allowed to say, what's happening? We can ask those questions. We can pass through this palace and say, what's happening? But God is talking to us at the same time. And that's really what Rabbi Sachs is talking about. And when we develop this emunah, Rabbi Sachs says, God not only creates, he communicates. He speaks to man and he tells him to extinguish the flames. And in fact, when we talk about emunah is twofold. There is fundamental emunah that God created the world and I believe it and it's deep and profound. But the higher level of faith is in my experience with God. Is that I have that connection. Is that I'm asking those questions. I'm passing the palace. Ba'aminu ba'ashem v'moshe avdo, I have this connection. And that's this, if you look, hold on 1 second. Let's look at, hold on. So we'll skip over Vitursky for a second. The Nesiva Shalom, the great Sefer, the beautiful Sefer of the you could buy, Rav Rozovsky, a beautiful commentary on Chumash, on Yom Tovim. He says, just Avram was tested with 10 tests. Each and every Jew was challenged during the course of their lives with 10 trials. For the life of every Jew is marked by ongoing challenges to inform him how endeared he is to God. The essential feature of a Jew being descended from Avraham is that he trusts in God when faced with the test. This is really what I tried to share with my student. I said, you're 100% right for asking these questions. These are fundamental questions we should ask. When we are faced with issues in Emunah, we should feel comfortable with the fact that we have a religion that says, ask away. Believe, but ask away. And that's number one. Number two is that like Avraham, we have to have an Emunah Pshuta. Pshuta doesn't mean, it's pashut, it's obvious. It takes a lot of strength and courage to have that Emunah Pshuta. And maybe that's why Avraham at 3 has it, but not the Avraham at 40. Avraham at 40 is more developed. He's more mature. He's more adult-like. He might have more questions. He still has Emunah Pshuta, but the child has Emunah Pshuta. And we see this palace. And the simple, so to speak, answer is, there really are no flames. To us, there are flames, and that's okay. That's normal. But to God is saying, I'm here. And I think that if at any time during our lives we needed a reminder that we are like Avraham, living through trials, and when Avraham lived through trials, his Emunah is ultimately what got him through it. Now, there's an amazing story. It's an amazing, amazing story by Ben Sherwood. Ben Sherwood wrote a book called The Survivors Club. Survivors Club was written about U.S. Air Force Captain Brian Udell. He was an experienced flight instructor with 100 combat missions. I mean, he had more than anybody else. So in this book, they write the following story. Now, this guy, Brian Udell, he was on a training exercise in his tactical fighter jet off the coast of North Carolina. It's a beautiful night. And he began what he said was an easy maneuver. An easy maneuver. I'm not a fighter pilot, so I don't know what that means, but an easy maneuver. And a 60-degree right turn, but something malfunctioned, and he finds himself upside down racing towards Earth at a vertical angle. At 10,000 feet, his plane shattered the Mach 1 barrier, and Udell knew it was time to bail out. Story goes, in the time it took Udell to just pull the ejection handle, however long that takes, a second, his plane traveled another 4,000 feet. He's less than 6 seconds away from crashing into the Atlantic Ocean. The bubble covering his cockpit rips open at 4,500 feet, and at 1,500 feet, he ejects out of his seat. And the force of that ejection tore off his helmet, his mask, his earplugs, his gloves, his watch, shredded his life preserver. The one-man life raft hanging at the end of his 15-foot cord attached to his right hip was still intact. He parachutes, opens 500 feet above water. He floats down in total darkness, he says. Suddenly, he plunged 10 feet under the frigid Atlantic water. He felt the salt water burn his wounds, but he struggled to get towards the surface alone 55 miles off the North Carolina coast in 5-foot seas without a life vest. He tried to frog kick. He's exhausted. He's running low on energy. His body ached. He repeatedly pulled himself to his life raft, but he had one functioning arm, basically. Couldn't get leverage, and the waves kept pushing him away. Finally, he put his head against the canvas, closed his eyes, and he had an image that appeared in his mind's eye of his wife, pregnant with their child. And at that moment, he said, God, I need help. He doesn't know. All of a sudden, big wave helps him with all of his strength. Somehow, he pulled himself onto the raft, and a wave nudged him to safety. And to this day, Udell is the only pilot ever to survive an ejection at sea level from a jet going that fast. He served 2 more terms, saw the birth of his child, and at his interview with this Ben Sherwood, he said, at the crowded intersection of what we command and what we don't, the most effective survivors know when to hold on and know when to let go and when to let God. When to let God. Emunah is letting God. Not letting go, it's letting God. Avram lets God. He doesn't say, whatever it is, I just have faith. That is what his Emunah is. That Emunah means letting go to God. To be like Avram, who searches and grows and asks questions and gets closer, even among things that are confusing and even tragic and upside down. To be like Avram is to find the strength we don't understand. To be like Avram is to deepen a connection. To be like Avraham is to use Emunah to bring God in, to let go. And especially when we can't control things, when we realize that things are out of our control, Avram tells us that's what Emunah is. And it's hard and it's difficult. Emunah, usually we think, all right, of course I believe in God. And we're being challenged and we're doing an amazing job. And we are like Avram. We are living through a trial. We are living through a major nisayon. And through that, our Emunah, even though we might not think it, is growing stronger, is getting more fortified, and is letting go to God. And that's how I think Avram didn't just live back then. Avram is living with us, mamish, right here in the present. So that's our first step in this series.